I got my body and my mind on the same page, and honey, now happiness is all the rage. I got my body and my mind on the same page, and honey, now happiness is all the rage.
The Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast. I am Kyle McEwen. You can find me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA, and I'm joined tonight by Mark Roberts. You can find on Twitter at Mark F. Roberts. Just seven games on the NBA slate for Tuesday. We're going to go through all the box scores, talk about the games, talk about the news from the day, and put it on a fantasy spin for everybody, which if you've listened to this podcast before, you already knew that that was going to happen. So, Mark, let's do this, dude. Chicago Bulls versus the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets ended up blowing out the Bulls. Pau Gasol could not guard Al Jefferson in the first quarter, and then it just kind of unraveled from there. Nikola Mirotic started kind of forcing up shots. It was a bad game. It was a blowout. There's not a lot to take from this, but Dougie McDermott had a good game, and people were pretty impressed with him, with his performance on the Twitters.
Yeah, I mean, he played 30 minutes, which was, I believe, was that a team high? Oh, Jimmy Butler played 32 minutes. He had 17 points, made 5 3-pointers, had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. Do you take anything away from that as far as what we can expect from him in the future?
Only that it looks very familiar. Like, if you were going to build a Doug McDermott, I actually had a good game line. It would be about 17 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. And maybe a steal.
Right. 5 3-pointers.
Maybe not 5 3-pointers, but you know, one of the,
but just 3-point. No, I was agreeing with you. Yeah.
Korver-esque was the term that was thrown out on Twitter tonight by one of the pundits, and not just in like, oh, he's a good shooter, like in the way he moves, how he gets open, finds space so that he can get off those open shots that other people just cannot even create themselves.
Yeah. Do you think they'll play him anymore because of this? Or do you not really care? Like, are you waiting to see something different before you do anything with him?
The issue on Tuesday for the Bulls was that Gasol wasn't able to guard Al Jefferson. Mirotic wasn't hitting his shots. Derrick Rose can't hit an open jump shot. And he's going to blame that on his bad eyesight, and that's maybe fair right now. But I think it's probably just because he's Derrick Rose. Him missing shots is his thorn. Bobby Portis made his rookie debut in the NBA, put up 10 points, 2 rebounds. And when one of the Charlotte players, Jeremy Lin, tried to shoot at the basket after a foul was called, there's a stop in play. Jeremy Lin tried to throw the ball at the basket, and Portis went up and grabbed it, much like Kevin Garnett would, which was he talks a lot about Kevin Garnett.
Did you see that feature on Kevin Garnett goaltending all the balls after the play stopped? They did like an interview on NBA TV, I think. It was pretty interesting.
No.
Yeah, you should. I think it's on Reddit. You can go check it out. He talks about basically like how he's just trying to mess with people.
Well, he did well.
The only thing I could think is like, how many jumps did Kevin Garnett waste doing that? Like, could he have like squeezed an extra year out of his career? Not that his career is over, but the awesomeness of his career is over. Like, if he goaltended 10,000 shots or something after the whistle, like, could he have used those to last one more season?
You think we have a certain amount of jumps in our body? Like, we're shock absorbers?
That might not be perfect science, but yeah, I guess that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that is the way it is. I would hope that our bodies just regenerate us every day in due time.
So fantasy-wise, the only reason I was asking about McDermott is because Snell certainly hasn't been like setting the world on fire the first half of this, you know, the first few games of the season. He was 0-for-4 tonight in 25 minutes.
Okay, like but
I'm just curious. I wonder if it gets to the point where McDermott starts to take some of those minutes or not.
You could see that, but I think McDermott being fantasy relevant on this team, it might be better for him to come off the bench, just because then they look for him to shoot the ball. If McDermott was in that starting lineup with Rose, Butler, Mirotic, and Gasol, when the hell would he touch the ball?
That's a good point. There's a lot of mouths to feed on that starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of not necessarily selfish guys, but shoot first guys, certainly. Yeah.
Miritich is the biggest offender of all of them from that perspective, which is, again, why we love him for fantasy-wise, but he's going to get his shots up for sure.
Right, and but it's also because he can hit three-pointers from the other team's foul line, so...
I love that guy.
You've seen those. If you haven't watched Miritich yet this season, he's taken three-point shots every single game from like 5 feet beyond the three-point line. He's like trying to get the NBA to actually put in a four-point line, I think. So it's pretty interesting. It's if you're a Golden State fan, you're not impressed because you watched Stephen Curry. And actually, that's going to be a sad thing. You know, I used to be a football fan growing up, but I watched Barry Sanders my whole childhood. And then I had to watch other people play football, and they were nowhere near as good as him. Steph Curry fans are going to have like this. It's going to be like this weird thing where your whole life you're comparing players to Steph Curry, and you're never going to be satisfied. And
I actually think that's like the best comp I've ever heard for Steph Curry is Barry Sanders. I know it's cross sport, but that's like a perfect personification of what Steph Curry is at this point. I think
what he does better and differently than what anybody else, has done it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't even trying to make that. So thanks.
No, good work. That's a good one.
Well, thanks for tying the shoelaces, Big Daddy. Marvin Williams came back to Earth. Can I get a hallelujah?
I mean, he still had fantasy value tonight, though, right?
Yeah, but not enough for people to actually talk about it in like a – well, not really. I mean, he had 10 rebounds, so that's good. But 4 points, 3 assists, was just 2 of 6 from the field. That's typical Marvin Williams. Even when you get 25 minutes, you have issue taking enough shots to make yourself relevant. Like, he's his own worst enemy, and that's been his issue his whole career.
Yeah, he needs – I mean, he's never been quite that aggressive guy that – you know, that discussion we had yesterday about Giannis taking a step forward because he's aggressive – more aggressive this season. I think Marvin Williams could take like 3 of those steps and he would be way better off. But I mean, I think you could argue the minutes were low because it was a blowout and he didn't need to play. And he still got 10 rebounds in the limited minutes that he played.
You're right. And I mean, but can we keep it negative with Marvin Williams, please?
Sure. He shot 33% from the field. He only had 4 points.
There we go, Mark.
No, I think the reason Marvin Williams has fantasy value so far this season is because he's playing in like the mid to high 30s in minutes.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm curious to see, what did he play 25 minutes just because it's a blowout? In which case, Marvin Williams isn't good enough to hold fantasy value. It's just interesting. Like, do you think he'll, like, I don't necessarily trust the 36 minutes that we've been seeing, and I don't know that it's going to be as low as 25 minutes either. It'll be interesting to see where he settles in.
Right.
Minutes go.
Right. And I'm not trying to extrapolate too far with what tonight's game means for Marvin Williams, but it's good to see the shoe drop a little bit, just a little bit. Nicholas Batum had 18 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. The only reason I'm bringing up Batum is because he's one of my favorite players to watch. Like, he just makes fun plays, and I just wanted to say that because it might lead to me actually watching a little bit more Charlotte Hornets than what I want to this season. PJ Hairston did not have his third-year option picked up by the Charlotte Hornets in the last 2 days, and as a result of that, he actually tried to do well tonight playing basketball. He's started all 5 games for the Charlotte Hornets, not been good. Tonight, he put up 10 points. 5 rebounds, 2 3-pointers in just 20 minutes. He was efficient and effective in the minutes he played. So the reasoning behind on why PJ Hairston is starting or in the starting lineup at all is because Coach Steve Clifford feels that if he put Jeremy Lamb in there or Jeremy Lin into the starting lineup, that those two players aren't good enough defensively to help out Nicholas Batum. So that means that he's pretty much just got Hairston in there as like extra help defense for Nicholas Batum. While we're watching Jeremy Lamb, who just signed a 3-year extension with the Charlotte Hornets, go out and score 20 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals off the bench, 2 three-pointers in 26 minutes. Ridiculously efficient from the field. Obviously, you're not going to duplicate 9 from 10 from the field. But we're seeing Jeremy Lamb start to do some good things off the bench, and I just think people should be aware that – he might be finding a comfort zone on this Hornets team. And if he continues to build on that, I think there's a good chance he ends up stealing away a starting role on this team at some point.
Yeah, I was really surprised when I saw that comment. I had no idea that PJ Hairston was somebody that the coach would deem defensively more valuable than other players on the team. Like, I would have just, in the limited things I knew about PJ Hairston, I would have guessed he was a poor defender. And I guess he could be, but at least he's better than the other two options.
And you know what? I actually missed out on saying a key point of that quote from Steve Clifford. Essentially, he said guarding the other player's best team. He needs somebody else in there to help guard the other player's best team some possessions, to take some of the workload off of Batum. And that, yeah, that's just so stark to say, like, you're putting PJ Hairston in there because you're like, man, we need somebody to go stop this dude. You know, it's like he's going to become it's the second coming of Ruben Patterson, the Kobe stopper. It's not real, but he thinks he's good.
Well, and it could be just him saying that Jeremy Lin and Jeremy Lamb are not good at defense, which, you know, maybe is a reason to pump the brakes on getting excited about Jeremy Lamb a little bit. If, like, I guess what I'm saying is, if the coach feels like PJ Hairston is an upgrade over Jeremy Lamb defensively, maybe Jeremy Lamb's not going to get enough playing time at any point.
I think Jeremy Lamb, I mean, this might be the last season we ever talk about him, but
he just signed a new deal.
But, and I say that because we're giving him another chance to prove that he's relevant this year, because he's on a new team, he's in a new situation, and you hope that he's actually going to, I mean, come on, man, you know, it's different. I guess maybe it's not different. Maybe if you were a Adam Morrison fan back in college, or a JJ Redick fan for what he was in college, and then they're a different player in the NBA, it's frustrating to you. And maybe that's the way I look at Jeremy Lamb, is like, I don't get too hyped up about college players too much, but watching him in college, he was just so smooth that it was so fun to watch. And I would actually make a point to watch Connecticut games to watch Jeremy Lamb. So maybe that's my issue, is that I need to learn how to let go.
You should have been watching his teammate, Andre Drummond, right? Weren't they college teammates?
I don't know. I don't think they were there together. I think Lamb was there with, not Hassan Whiteside, but who's that? Who was that big dude that the Memphis Grizzlies took?
Oh,
second overall.
The Beat.
Hashim the Beat. So the Hassan was close. Hashim the Beat, I think they were on the same team, and then Lamb stayed for his second year. Isn't that what happened? That was Kemba and Hassan. I keep calling him Hassan. Hashim the Beat.
Jeremy Lamb and Andre Drummond played together.
That's so weird. I don't think it was. Lamb was drafted before.
But that's a nice segue into our Drummond night tonight.
True that. We should get to the second.
What he did.
We should get to the second game. Andre Drummond had a career high 29 rebounds in the Pistons' loss to the Indiana Pacers. Pistons came out in this game, were just destroying them in the first quarter. Looked good. Then the second unit came in, the backups, and in 7 minutes of Steve Blake running the backup contingent, the Pistons got just shellacked. Steve Blake was a negative 20 in his 7 minutes. So in the second half, Spencer Dinwiddie got the backup point guard minutes, and he at least was just a zero in the plus minus. So he's a wash. But Stanley Johnson's probably the guy most people want to hear about. Stanley Johnson had 4 personal fouls in just 12 minutes. Didn't look too hot out there. Has played now 14 minutes and 12 minutes in the last 2 games. A lot of people are going to want to drop him. I'm waiting until the end of the week, because this Pistons team, their second unit's been so bad that something's got to change in their next game. And we'll see. Here's the issue, though. The reason Stanley Johnson's not been good so far this year is, if there's good players out there on your waiver wire, drop him. You know, like, if there's somebody good who's going to have consistent value, feel free to drop Stanley Johnson, pick them up. Like, don't hang on to him just because I'm psychotic about him and because he's on my favorite team.
Would you drop Stanley Johnson for Marvin Williams?
No.
I was hoping I could get you to agree to that one.
No.
That might be your least favorite player for your most favorite player. sorry. I found a box score from 2011 from UConn Huskies that has Andre Drummond and Jeremy Lamb and Shabazz Napier in it.
You know what? I probably watched Lamb. So wait a minute. Well, okay. I watched Lamb more in his first year than I did in his second year.
Yeah, and I don't know when they exactly came out, but
it would, yeah.
I thought they were both. Yeah, I'm not sure if they were drafting the same. I guess I could have looked that up too.
No worries.
Anyway, back to, no, we're okay.
So here's the Stanley Johnson issue. Like, I think he just hasn't had the ball in his hands enough. When playing with Steve Blake always brings the ball up the court and then he dribbles around, and you always know what the outcome is. If you're the defense, he's going to dribble around, then he's going to eventually pass. If you give the ball to Stanley Johnson, he'll bring it up the court. That's what he did in Orlando. That's what he was doing a lot in the preseason. He was the primary ball handler. They would give him the ball. He would have the choice to push it, to attack, or to give it up. You have to start doing that. They're playing him off the ball constantly. So he doesn't have an opportunity to actually go out there and make plays and kind of develop, you know, develop the play that they're in into something that's going to be a good outcome. I'm blaming Steve Blake more than anything. Or here's the other thing. SVG just might be trying to develop Stanley Johnson off the ball. And if that's the case, that's not his strength right now. So it's not going to be good. We'll wait and see what happens.
The Pistons starting lineup played a lot of minutes. And I guess it's maybe because the bench unit struggled so badly. But that's not the first time this year we've said that.
No, but it's also four games into the season. Like, Stan Van Gundy doesn't want to be running his starters 34 to 40 minutes a game. Like, you know, not all of them. I mean, Ersan only played 22 minutes in each of the last two games, and then he plays 35 minutes tonight. Marcus Morris played 39 minutes. Marcus Morris has been playing like 36 to 38 minutes every single game. Andre Drummond's playing absurd amount of minutes, but they just don't have good depth right now because they haven't figured out how to play as a second unit. And also, Stan Van Gundy's pretty much subbing in the second unit as like a hockey thing. Like, he's just subbing in a second line. All five of them coming at the same time.
That might be part of the reason they're a minus 20. Like, that's not always a great strategy.
Yep.
I wonder why he's doing that.
He had KCP in there at first, but then he ended up taking KCP out. It was whatever. So there's issues there. It's playing out well for the Pistons starters, though. So that's good.
I'm sorry things didn't work out with Stanley Johnson, Kyle.
It's not that they didn't work out. Everybody needs to be patient. It's four games.
Yeah, but you can't own him in fantasy right now.
Hold on. You can in year-long fantasy?
Yeah.
I'm holding on to him for at least one more game, and I'm comfortable holding on to him until the end of the week unless something crazy, you know, like some like no-doubt addition is available on the waiver wire. But if it's a bunch of middling guys who are maybe or maybe not going to have value, then I'm not going to put somebody else on my team who's in the same situation as Stanley, essentially. Like if Nemanja Bjelica from Minnesota, if he got moved into the starting lineup, I'd go drop Stanley Johnson and pick him up. But right now, all Bjelica's doing is playing tepidly off the bench. He's playing big minutes and you're interested, but until he actually gets more aggressive himself, there's not much to get there. There's just whatever. Okay, I guess this is, you're right. For Stanley Johnson's, I promise everybody we'll be done with this in like 2 seconds. You're right. Stanley Johnson's value right now is not good enough to own in fantasy, but it's four games into the season. Like that.
No, everything. Yeah, I can't argue that.
Everything, like there is something to be said about just being patient, waiting for some of this stuff to just kind of figure itself out. Because the Pistons aren't going to hold steady with a bunch unit that's getting beat to a pulp every night. They're not going to hold fast with that and hold steady.
Yeah, and I understand that. I guess I just feel like, from my perspective, you can't own somebody who's playing 12 minutes.
Oh no, not a, I mean,
you know what I mean? Like if he was getting 30 minutes a night and he was just struggling, but we were seeing things that he was doing and being like, you know, be patient. The minutes are there. The skill is there. We're just not seeing the production. Sort of like what we're seeing maybe with like Myers Leonard, I would be more on board, but the low minutes,
we have a good convenient comparison in Miles Turner over on the Pacers side of things. He's playing just 15. He played just 15 minutes on Tuesday, put up 6 points, 4 rebounds, 3 blocks. But Jan Mahinmi suffered a back injury in this game. Now, Jordan Hill started the second half, ended up playing 23 minutes, put up 10 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal. We've seen Jordan Hill get plenty of opportunity the last couple of years on the Lakers. He's not going to have sustained value. He won't be good enough consistently enough, and he probably won't stay healthy. That's kind of the story with Jordan Hill.
Oh, I agree with that.
So, and then Lavoie Allen, he's not a great permanent producer. So you're probably not going to get value there.
I still think those guys are going to suck enough minutes away from Miles Turner that he's not going to play enough to be fantasy relevant either.
If you own Miles Turner, I'd wait and hear what the Jan Mahinmi situation turns out to be. How badly is he hurt? Does he just have a little bit of back pain and Mahinmi will end up being back in the starting lineup? But if Miles Turner ends up getting more minutes as a result of the Mahinmi injury, if he ends up starting the next game, then Miles Turner would become somebody that you would go pick up. And the thing is, it's like we do really just have to be patient at the beginning of the year. If you believe in a player, be patient with them. And I don't know. I don't think Stanley Johnson's a bad player just because he's had a bad couple games. Does that make sense at least?
No, and I don't think he's a bad player. What I'm saying is basically he doesn't seem to have the role that he would need to have to be fantasy relevant. I'm not saying he's played good or bad. Like, I've watched him. I've seen good things from him. I'm just saying, you know, if they're going to play him anywhere, if there's a potential that he plays 12 minutes one night, I don't really want to deal with that on my fantasy team.
That's something I completely agree with. Like, that perspective of it. If a guy's only going to play 12 minutes on a given night, why would you want him on your team? I'm going to have to journal about that later because you just touched my core. All right,
let's. We can hug it out after the podcast.
I hope you don't think that I take offense to you like giving me a dose of reality.
No, I'm not saying I don't think you're offended. I'm just, it sucks when you have a player that you think is going to do well, and the only reason they're not producing is because they don't have that role on the team. You know what I mean? Like, I think my best example of that this year is John Jenkins, who continues to remind me is not doing well. And it's not that he's not doing well. Like, he's just not playing. He played one game and he did great. And then he's inactive or doesn't play most of the other nights. So,
yeah,
you know, you can't own him because he's not going to play. But I do think if he got 30 minutes a game or 25 minutes a game, he would be interesting.
Well, I mean, Mark, you shouldn't be too hard on yourself. We projected him for like, what, 26 or 28 minutes? And that was with,
I think it was 25. Yeah.
Okay. Then it was from the perception that Wesley Matthews and Chandler Parsons weren't going to be playing at this time of the year, and they are, and it just muddles things up.
Well, and I didn't expect JJ Barea and Devin Harris to be getting, and Raymond Felton to be all three getting the kind of minutes they were getting.
Raymond Felton, really? Are you playing three point guards off the bench? Who does that?
You can see why I was confused. I didn't think they'd run a 4-point guard rotation.
Rick Carlisle, you do not care.
All I'm saying is we can hug it out and you can make me feel better about Jenkins. And
each other.
Yeah. Not adversarial at all, Kyle.
Okay.
We're on the same team here.
Sometimes it's fun to tell you you're dummy and right back at me, I hope. All right. Let's talk about the Atlanta Hawks and the Miami Heat. Paul Millsap played another 36 minutes. On Tuesday, Al Horford had another good game, but Horford didn't take any three-point shots tonight. Don't worry, he's still going to shoot them. He shot 5 3-point attempts in his last three games coming into Tuesday. Jeff Teague had a big night, 26 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, 1 steal, 2 3-pointers on 34 minutes. You know, rather than waffling between, maybe the Hawks are actually going to, I'm deluding myself. I keep.
Where are you going with that?
Well, like, Paul Millsap is playing more minutes this year. I think Al Horford's playing more minutes this year. Jeff Teague gets 34 minutes tonight. You just wish that the Hawks would just, rather than playing Jeff Teague like 29 minutes a game like they did last year, play him 34 minutes a game. He'd be awesome. You wouldn't have any qualms about him. And then Schroeder would just be a backup, and he wouldn't be relevant or tantalizing until he was actually ready to produce for you. So anyways,
I can't really put my finger on why. I kind of feel like the Millsap minutes are real. And I think it's probably, if I have to say why, I think it's probably just the lack of depth they have on the wings. Like, you can see tonight, Splitter played 21 minutes versus Millsap's 36 and Horford's 34. So you know that they probably had all three of them there in the game. Mike Scott played 12 minutes. So they're using Millsap as a small forward, which I kind of didn't expect them to do. I mean, I know there was talk about it, but I didn't really expect them to employ it. But, you know, they're doing it. So I think his minutes are more real than, like, I'm not just going to slough off and say, yeah, he's not actually going to play that many minutes. I think there's.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit. But, yeah, Millsap.
I think Millsap's minutes might be real.
Right, yeah, and I agree with you. The one thing that might be changing that up a little bit, we saw Kyle Korver sit out one of a back-to-back set. We saw Tabo Sefolosha sit out one of a back-to-back set and then sit out tonight. It might be all the guys that some of the wing players they have sitting out that's kind of pushing them to give him these bigger minutes, and maybe that'll go away if they get healthy. But no team stays healthy, so we'll see what happens.
Have you heard anything about Tim Hardaway?
He's on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me they would trade a first-round pick for him and then never play him.
I think they deluded themselves into thinking he was an NBA player before they traded for him. And they probably didn't like whoever. Wasn't that a draft night trade?
Yeah, it was the Jerian Grant pick, I think, to the Knicks.
Okay, so I guess they just wanted Tim Hardaway because they thought he was better than the other people that were available in the draft at that time.
But if you're going to do that, you just don't never suit up Tim Hardaway?
They saw him play basketball now that he's on the team, in live and in person, and they realize that he's, like, I'm not even trying to be mean. Like, I'm trying to be realistic. Like, if you've watched Tim Hardaway play the last couple of years in New York, it wasn't fun. On the Miami side of this game, we saw Hassan Whiteside have another good game. Was 11 of 12 from the field in just 31 minutes, 23 points, 14 rebounds, 4 blocks. Go Hassan Whiteside, man. He's getting it done. So congrats to everybody.
Well, Kyle, you said 31 minutes. That's kind of a big deal for Whiteside. Like, we thought coming into the season, he might only play 24 to 26 minutes per game.
Yeah, that's huge. But and no personal fouls, too. So
that's a shocker, actually. Yep. If he's going to play 30 minutes a game, I mean, he might be better than Gobert.
There's been a lot of stats coming out that Hassan Whiteside plays way better with Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic plays way better with Chris Bosh. So you might see them start to stagger the rotations a little bit. And anytime Wade's out there, you might get more out of Hassan Whiteside. And that's something I hope we can keep an eye on this season, just kind of cursory, is seeing, like, okay, if Wade's sitting out a game, does Whiteside have a bad game because people aren't finding him as well? So stuff like that. That'll be fun to kind of take a gauge at. Justice Winslow played 23 minutes, put up 4 points, 4 rebounds. The only reason I really mention him is because he did leave the game briefly for some sore lower back issue, but he came back and was able to stay in the game. Biscuits. Gerald Green. I knew there was something more important from this Miami Heat game. Gerald Green was ill, and he was a late scratch, so condolences to anybody who had him in your daily games lineup. It's pretty brutal to have a guy scratch like 5 minutes before games tip off or before a game tips off. So, moving on to the Orlando Magic versus New Orleans Pelicans game. My boy Luke Babbitt was moved into the starting lineup, put up 8 points, eight rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 2 3-pointers in 28 minutes. Do we need to go add Luke Babbitt everywhere?
Are you asking me or are you telling me?
It was a question.
He's not a permanent starter in New Orleans, so I don't expect him to get minutes once everybody's healthy, but who knows when everyone's going to be healthy.
I don't know, because here's the situation under which they
start over Eric Gordon or Tyreek Evans.
No, Dante Cunningham. And he,
do you think he's going to be the power forward to Anthony Davis's center?
I don't know if they'll actually bring Tyreek Evans, put him back into the starting lineup when he's healthy.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's a lock to happen. And
but they're still going to play him the 33 minutes a game that he's cut out for, whether that's as a starter or as a bench player.
If Evans was coming off the bench, I know last year he got a lot of minutes when he played off the bench, but that was under Monty Williams too. So I don't know. I don't know that that's a guarantee. Just thinking. But anyways, Luke Babbitt, look, he's worth keeping an eye on right now because he could be kind of a three-point specialist for this team. He could maybe get big minutes. He's got great size, and he fits the team well. You know what's probably going to happen with the Pelicans? I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to fantasize about lineups that have Anthony Davis at center, just like we all fantasize about the Thunder and Kevin Durant playing all of his minutes at power forward, so that you can have a more modern lineup and go out there and really just destroy teams. But unfortunately, the Pelicans have Alexis Ajinsa, Kendrick Perkins, and Omer Asik on their team. So they're kind of forced to go out there and play these old school lineups that, in my opinion, just don't make a half a lick of sense in today's NBA. So
yeah, and I don't know. I've never really heard Anthony Davis say one way or the other, but I wonder if it's to either he doesn't like to play center or the team doesn't like him to play center because they feel like it could end in an injury or bumps and bruises that doesn't allow him to play as proficiently as he would like to.
Like, I get it. If there was like a Kendrick Perkins,
never likes to play center.
Any player who complains about their position or who they have to match up with, like, unless it's an obvious loss when you compile what they can do on one side of the court and the other side of the court. Here, thing about Anthony Davis, if they start starting him at center, other teams aren't going to put big dumpy centers on him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they can't guard him. So like that whole narrative to me, just like, it just feels like people are believing, like, the Pelicans are doing what they think they have to do because of the roster they have. Like, I bet Gentry sitting over there going, like, I have to start one of these centers, otherwise I'm going to not be playing like 25 million worth of guys the whole damn season. So, but he doesn't want to. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. And to be clear, I don't know that I've heard that from Anthony Davis. I'm just spitballing why they might be going that way.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Gentry did come out and say in the preseason that, well, we don't want him getting beat up with centers. But that's what you say because it's a convenient explanation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eric Gordon had a good game, 21 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 three-pointers in 38 minutes. And Drew Holiday played 23 minutes, a little bit down from the 27 he played in their last game, and a little bit off of the 25-minute threshold they have him on currently. So, but another nice game out of Drew in some respects. 14 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 2 three-pointers in those 23 minutes. So pretty nice work there. If you here's something to keep in mind. If you heard that Alexis Ajinsa was starting prior to the Pelicans game and you're going to put him into your daily lineup, always take into account the fact that is the team the same? Is the situation the same? Alexis Ajinsa had some nice daily games nights last year, but Monty Williams isn't the coach anymore. So just because Ajinsa was starting tonight doesn't mean he was going to go out there and get a healthy complement of minutes. And he only played 20. So just something to keep in mind. Toronto versus Dallas. The Toronto Raptors signed Terrence Ross to a 4 years, $11 million per year? Something like that, wasn't it?
It was 11 per year. I thought it was a 3-year extension, okay, which means okay, he's staying for 4 more years.
Oh, wow. But I mean, $11 million with the cap going up and stuff to like twice over the next 2 years in considerable way, is $11 million really? Should anybody be like, no way?
Well, I think that's what everybody's saying today. Like, how can he make $11 million? But if you sort of just divide 11 by the $108 million salary cap that there's going to be in a few years, I mean, that means he's going to be getting, what, 10% of the salary cap?
Yeah, the mid-level exception's probably going to be $10 million or $11
million. Yeah, so, you know, this doesn't mean... So I think what some people are extrapolating, like, wow, he just got an $11 million deal. That means he's going to be starting soon. Or that means they've really committed to him. He's going to play big minutes. I don't think that's what it means now or ever. Like what you're saying, if that's a mid-level exception money, that might mean all they expect from him is to be a solid backup, which sounds crazy, right? But that's where the salary cap is these days.
I'm trying to see if Valanciunas actually played. Yes, okay, he played in the... Okay, cool.
I think he played, what, 32 or 34 minutes?
34.
You would have a hard time playing 34 minutes and not playing in the fourth quarter.
I know, right? Well, somebody tweeted at me tonight.
Yeah.
Michael's, I think that was from Michael Parr. He's a cool guy, smart guy. I think...
Frustrated Jonas owner, sounded like to me.
Yep. But 16 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks. Well, you like the 2 blocks out of Jonas because he doesn't really give you that too often these days.
Yeah. That's a pretty good line for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the Boston situation was. Looks like they're beating him pretty handily. I'm not reading too much into what's going on with Jonas right now, unless shouldn't be looking at that stuff while we're doing this, should I? I keep forgetting that we're broadcasting that. Like,
my favorite part of every show is when you show everybody your private messages.
Oh, man.
I'm always rooting for it when your mouse kind of like hovers over.
You're just waiting for me to like one of my porn sites to show up in the URL thing like it did on like one of the first shows. Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping that.
More like from messages from your mom or something.
Now, that would just be adorable. Oh, Debbie, yeah. What are you doing today? Luis Scola, 19 points, 12 rebounds, 2 steals, 1 assist, 1 three-pointer. Holy cow. What do you think about Luis Scola playing 31 minutes as a starting power forward? Is this somebody who you are considering adding in any leagues, Mark?
Nope.
Just pass. Can you tell us why we should not pick up Luis Scola?
Yeah, bring up his game log. That might help the discussion a little bit here. And then I didn't mean to be too flippant with that, but I mean, the first thing to notice is this is the first time he's exceeded 24 minutes this season. So even though he's been the starter, he's not playing big minutes. I'm not sure what happened. Next thing to notice is this is the first time he's gone over 10 points or 10 rebounds this season. Actually, you know, sort of surprised as I'm looking at this to see the rebounds as high as they have been this season. But, you know, again, if you just take off this one box score and say, we have a player here who's averaging about 20 minutes a game and he's averaging about, I don't know, call it 8 points a game. That's not someone that you would be interested in adding ever. So I think this is just one of those games that happens that, like, if you happen to have played him in daily fantasy, that's great, but it's not something that is going to be indicative of future performance.
Early in the season, when you see a guy like Luis Scola, who you are not going to go pick up because you know that his value is not sustained beyond tonight, really. What you do is you go and you check your league and you see who does pick up Luis Scola. And then you, you probably pick up whoever they dropped because they panicked and dropped somebody who's good. So that's what
I thought you were going to say. You go offer that guy a bunch of trades.
You could definitely do that too. Oh, we found the shill. All right. Yep. Damari Carroll had a subpar game, just 3 points, but he played 34 minutes. He was 1 of 8 from the field, so he struggled there. You know what? There's a good – don't overreact to a bad game either, okay?
Yeah, no, this is the exact opposite. I mean, you look at the minutes are there for this player. He's played at least 31 minutes and up to 41 minutes in all the regular season games here. He's shooting a lot of three-pointers, so he helps you there. He's scoring pretty well. He's getting you rebounds. He's historically been very good at steals. So, you know, if you see, and I know this is just a convenient example, but yeah, if you see somebody dropped Damari Carroll for Luis Scola, go pick up Damari Carroll.
Yeah, Yep. All right, on the Dallas Mavericks side of this game, Dirk Nowitzki played 35 minutes. Way to go, Dirk. And Dirk's actually been pretty darn good in daily games so far this season. So it's been pretty interesting. He scored 11, 16, 25, and 18 points in his games, playing just 21, 25, 30, and 35 minutes. Man, that's really surprising to see Dirk eclipse.
Does that mean he's going to play 40 minutes next game? If he played 25, then 30, then 35?
Finish off the season playing 12,000 minutes in one game. Oh my gosh, he's chucking the three-pointers this year, or at least the last couple games. 3 of 5 from three-point land in both Sunday and on Sunday, and then 3 for 4 on Tuesday. Wow. Dirk Nowitzki off to a hot start. Wow, sell him. Seriously, like try to trade Dirk Nowitzki right now for...
Is that because you don't think he can be this productive anymore, or because you don't think he'll either stay healthy or kind of keep playing this level of minutes? Like, what is the part of you that you feel like this isn't sustainable?
They said they only wanted to play him 26 minutes this season. That's from the mouth of the coach, Rick Carlisle. How many minutes did he play last year? You know, he's 37 years old.
It was like 27, 28 or something.
Yeah, he played just under 30 minutes last year, and they're talking about only playing him 26 minutes a game this year. His shooting's unsustainable right now. He's shooting 55% from the field, or he was through his first three games, 56% from three. Those things are going to come back to normal numbers, and then Dirk's not going to look as good. Nearly.
Yeah. I actually think it's probably the rebounds too that is going to jump down. I mean, I kind of feel like he can average 15 to 18 points a game. You know, I think Dirk Nowitzki could average that in 5 seasons from now. He's just that good of a offensive player. But you can see the rebounds historically, like where they've been headed, you know, down from 7 a few years ago to 6.5 to 5 under 6 last year. He's not going to be able to sustain that 8.5 that he's at this season.
There's a lot of stuff that Dirk is doing right now that is not going to be sustainable. So would you trade him, go out there and try to trade him for Mirotić or something?
Oh, man. If I could pull off that trade, I would be thrilled. Absolutely.
Trade him for Stanley Johnson.
I would not recommend doing that if anybody is.
Double-double Dwight Powell. We just got him a new nickname.
I like
it. Put up 10 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals in 26 minutes off the bench against Toronto. Was 4 of 14 from the field, so that's gag-worthy, but he's not usually going to shoot that poorly. That's really interesting. This Dwight Powell cat, man. JJ Cali had the call of the preseason on him. It looks like he's going to have a pretty decent role on this Dallas Mavericks team this year.
Yeah.
If you're playing in like a 16, 18 team league, I'd probably be rostering this guy right now to see what happens.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. So we already talked about John Jenkins was inactive. Justin Anderson played just 1 minute. We all hate Raymond Felton. Let's go on and take a look at the final two games of the night that are still going on a little bit. It's just in the third quarter for the Grizzlies and Kings game. We know that DeMarcus Cousins is out for – he was out for tonight's game. He's going to try and return Friday, I believe he said.
Does that make you at all – his specific injury, does that make you at all nervous?
Absolutely. Strained Achilles are scary. Yeah. Anything to do with, like, Achilles, calves, that stuff lingers, man. And it gets aggravated.
Your strained Achilles turns into a torn Achilles, and then your career is different than it used to be.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the thing is about – torn Achilles, they just seem to happen when nobody, right. You know, like nobody, I didn't hear anything about Brandon Jennings. And I also feel like if we, all the guys that have torn their Achilles, I feel like if there was a warning sign prior to them that we would have heard about that. And I never read about that, you know, like, oh, he was dealing with this for a month and a half. And then all of a sudden, snap. It's always just like, well, shoot, that guy just went down and nobody touched him. He's dead.
Yeah. So. No, that's a good point. I just, the thought of his Achilles being weak, it makes me nervous.
Mark, why don't you tell people what Willie Cauley-Stein in his start with DeMarcus Cousins being out has done so far in 19 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, 19 minutes in the first half. Are we even through the first half? Yeah, just yep. through the first half. 19 minutes is good. He shot 2 of 2 from the field, which is okay. Not a lot of shots. He's 1 for 4 from the line. So he has 5 points, 1 rebound, and 1 steal.
We've got the haterade for Cauley Stein, mostly from the perspective that he's not a great per-minute producer. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, yeah. His college stats don't necessarily translate to the type of production that you would to fantasy relevant production, even if he gets like 28 minutes a game.
Worst pick of the top 10 from this year, absolutely.
And not surprising that which team it came from. I will say that Cauley Stein, like the category I've been saying all along, that he could be useful in his steals, which is not what you would expect. Like, he's a big guy, you would expect maybe rebounds or blocks or something else. I think he's going to be very poor in points. He's going to be less good in rebounds and blocks than you think, but I think he could be useful in steals.
Very cool. It sounds like Cousins is going to be back in short order, but while Cousins is out, keep an eye on Omri Caspi for daily game stuff. He has the propensity to drop a big game every once in a while, and with like diverse stat line that you're just like, what? How? Where the hell did that come from?
It didn't come tonight so far.
Rajon Rondo has been playing really well, Mark, as far as fantasy wise goes. Do you put any stock in that? I would.
I was sort of drafting him late in drafts, so and I've been happy with him so far. I mean, some of the things you don't think are going to actually continue. Like, I don't think his percentage is going to be, I think he's shooting, what, 52%, 53%? That's not going to probably continue. But we know that he can get a lot of assists. So
good rebounder for a point guard.
Yeah, good rebounds. He's scoring a bit more than we would think. But other than that, I think there's nothing that seems not real about his production.
He used to be an elite steals guy when he got enough minutes, but is he going to get enough minutes to get to that 1.5 to 2 steals per game that he used to give you every single game back when he was good?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think he's going to get the playing time in Sacramento. Like,
well, I mean, through the first 3 games, he had 25 minutes, 24 minutes, and then 33 minutes. And then tonight he's going to probably play a lot. Yeah, it looks like he's.
I guess I'm more surprised by the 25 and the 24 minutes being low than the 33 minutes being high.
Even though I'm surprised by the 33 minutes. Like, I didn't think that was a possibility, because I look at this Darren Collison and Rondo.
Everybody's kind of been on the Darren Collison, like he's going to eventually take his job, and I guess I could see that, but I don't know. I guess I've just so far been on the Rajon Rondo side of it.
I need to watch a dang Sacramento Kings game. I've been avoiding them. I just don't want to watch.
Wait until Boogie gets back. If you're going to sit through that, you might as well watch Boogie play.
Thanks for looking out, man. Really appreciate that.
You don't want to watch this team play.
No, not at all. I hate Marco Bellinelli. And so when you bring in bench players, I got to hate your bench players too. Caron Butler, watched enough of that.
I actually thought you were a down on Collison. I feel like we had the same discussion last year, except for it was reversed. I was pro Collison and you were anti Collison.
I don't like him because he doesn't get you. I don't think he gets you steals and stuff. Like, I hate guards who don't get you steals. Mm-hmm. I absolutely hate them. And he also doesn't shoot many 3-pointers. So you're not getting steals. You're not getting 3-pointers out of him. I guess he did get 1.5 steals per game last year. Well done. Way to rub it in my face. And he was also playing 35 minutes per game. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then didn't he blow out some part of his life? I can't remember.
I don't remember what he did.
There's a reason he only played 45 games.
Yep. Whatever. That's Hey, congrats to any Rondo owners who have enjoyed the two back-to-back 21-point games. Like, that's awesome. But I would be trying to sell high on Rondo because I just there's like all this talk about George Karl. Maybe it was just because the Vegas lines were getting shoved around on Twitter today, but there's a lot of conversation about Karl and like who's gonna get fired first, and it's like, whoa, really already? Already?
Who's the favorite?
I think George Karl's the top.
Really?
Derek Fisher is right below like George Karl and like Lionel Hollins or something.
So, yeah, Lionel Hollins would be maybe my pick. Yep. My secret pick would maybe be Dave Yeager. Memphis has struggled so far this season and they have expectations. Like, I guess I would say the thing with, you know, I don't know, Lionel Hollins or whoever is, there's not a lot of expectations there. So there's the, you know, the Heat's not going to get turned up. It would just have to be sort of like a Brian Shaw situation where it was so depressing for the players. They just had to get him out of there.
If Memphis was going to fire somebody, I think it's more likely they fire the front office and John Hollinger and those guys and then put Dave Yeager into like a, you know, like a Van Gundy or Popovich role where they're the president.
Whoa.
Where he's in charge of everything so he can actually build the team he wants because he's an advanced stats guy and you've had him out there running with, you know, Jeff Green and I'm not a big Courtney Lee fan. Tony Allen has his purpose, but if you're going to have Tony Allen on your team as a defensive stopper, you need a lot of
shooting.
Yeah. And you know, I get it. Zach Randolph's good in the same way that LaMarcus is good. He does stretch the floor in his own way, but it's on those inefficient two-point shots that just leave you wanting. Here's my confession about the Grizzlies. I still don't know who the hell Jamichael Green is, who Jordan Adam is, and then there's like one other guy on their team where it's like, I have some kind of concept of who everybody is. I don't know what these guys look like. Because, and it feels like they've been on the team for the last three seasons, just cycling on the bench. Every once in a while, somebody will get 6 minutes for a game. It's just a weird team, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that the Grizzlies were able to re-sign Marc Gasol. But now that they have him and they have him locked down, I would almost blow it up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Grizzlies are expecting, like, not that this is reasonable, but in their head, they're thinking a good season is home court advantage in the playoffs. And I do think they'll make the playoffs, but all I'm saying is there's a chance they go like 5-15 or something, and then Yeager's out.
Who would you build around? How old is Marc Gasol?
I think he's 30.
Yeah, you can't
it's
do
just
that.
It's just a tough thing because like Zach Randolph and Tony Allen are so unique to that team. And they're like, that's the essence of their team, but they're getting old and they have holes in their game at the same time. So it's like, I don't feel like they can move on until they get rid of those two players. But at the same time, those are the two like heart and soul players of their team.
I just don't know how a numbers guy like John Hollinger goes out and trades for Jeff Green.
Well, he's not the only one running the front office. Like, if you've read anything that Hollinger wrote about Jeff Green, you know that he didn't make that trade, like, by himself. I think his role with the front office, at least from what I understand, is a little bit overblown. Like, I think because he was such a media presence, he's put up as, like, he's the decision maker, and I don't think that's the case. I think he helps make some of the decisions.
Is it Chris Wallace that's in charge there? Did they like bring, I think, I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's definitely even one person. I just think.
Right. That's just it. The face of the Grizzlies has become John Hollinger, their owner, Robert Pera, who's like a young guy who hangs out with Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
And whoa. Timberlake fans out there, I'm with you. I'm not like a big Timberlake fan or anything, but I apologize for the confusion or by saying the Bieber word after his name. On the other side of this Memphis game, Sacramento, we already talked about, and I don't know why I just did that. Denver Nuggets versus Los Angeles Lakers, the Emmanuel Mudiay versus D'Angelo Russell game. Damn it, D'Angelo. I'm like,
Jordan Clarkson's having a good game.
D'Angelo Russell's like, I don't like him, but I'm kind of rooting for him to do well because I just want it. I want him to overcome the swamp that is Byron Scott. That's what
I'm. And reportedly, he's dating a Kardashian, for whatever that's worth.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Dang it.
So if you needed one extra reason to drop him, maybe that's your extra reason.
Well, I mean, all right, what's D'Angelo Russell? Is he ownable in 12-team leagues, or would you hold on to him due to the potential there?
No, I mean, I think that's what I'm saying is he hasn't played well enough. Now, he's a little bit harder of a situation for me than Stanley Johnson because he is playing at least borderline fantasy-relevant minutes. He played 26, 23, 27, and then tonight he's only played 13, but you figure he's probably going to get close to between 25 and 30 again. So,
yeah, you're not dropping this cat right now.
I know he's available in the listener league that you and I play in, and
oh no, I mean, I've got a waiver claim on him.
Okay. Well, I'll go put one in too then.
Yeah.
As
soon as I saw him dropped, I was like, come on guys. Like you have to be, he's the starting point guard,
right?
And he's a rookie. And it's been a week. It has been a week today. I know it seems like we've been watching basketball for a month already, but it's been a week, y'all. Like, you got to give him some time.
I think that's a very grounded stance, I think. Good job.
Byron Scott came out with one of his stupid quotes. He has a dumb quote every single day.
He really does.
And, you know, he seems like a very nice guy. Like, I think I would love being friends with Byron Scott. He seems like a cool dude. And I don't think he's dumb. I just think he was brought up in that whole, like, Lakers mentality where you can do no wrong kind of thing. And so he said that they're bringing D'Angelo Russell along slowly. They are kind of, like, giving him different goals or whatever. And they're about 30% along in that process right now. To where they're going to be with him. You're just like, how? I don't know, man. Just give him the ball and let him play. Tell Kobe to go stand in the corner.
So the reason I was hesitating with whether to own him or not is because there's just been so much. There hasn't been a lot of like momentum for him being a good NBA player. Like, I feel like from the moment he was drafted, there has been a lot of nervousness. Like, is he a bust already? You know, he didn't have a very good summer league. He didn't have a very good preseason. I know that I'm like the last person that should be talking about summer league and preseason performance. I guess I just worry that while there is upside, I think he could also just be a guy that is in a month is still playing like the 25 to 30 minutes and not giving you anything. So if you don't want to own him, I guess I can't blame you for that either.
But we always talk about during drafts that it's so hard to get assists off the waiver wire. So if somebody drops D'Angelo Russell, that's your chance to get assists off the waiver wire. So get those assists and then worry about it later. We all know that D'Angelo Russell is a competent, good passer. He doesn't have the ball in his hands enough to do it. This Lakers team is really weirdly constructed. Jordan Clarkson's having a hell of a game, so let's give him some props and talk about something positive. 20 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 8 of 10 from the field, 4 of 5 from 3-point. Holy hell. In 17 minutes just so far at halftime right now for the Lakers. Lou Williams at halftime has played 16 minutes.
I don't even know how they're doing that.
I want to break my own stuff in my house right now. Because Lou Williams is taking away minutes from meaningful players. Roy Hibbert only played 6 minutes in the first half of this Denver versus Los Angeles game. Denver has Joffrey Laverne and Nikola Jokic out. So they started J.J. Hickson at center. He's played just 7 minutes in the first half. Kenneth Fareed got 18 minutes in the first half. I mean, their options in the front court on Tuesday night are Darrell Arthur, Kenneth Fareed, J.J. Hickson, and then running Danilo Gallinari at power forward.
But it's impressive they were able to play Roy Hibbert. Like, with their limitations, they were able to play Roy Hibbert off the court. And now it's just going to be Julius Randle matching up versus Kenneth Fareed at center.
And I thought that might have been something that Julius Randle, like, they could have just, like, both fed each other in some ways by their bad decision making and great rebounding and stuff like that. Because Julius Randle, he had a hell of a game the other night, man. He ended up putting up 22 points and 15 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals in 34 minutes back on Sunday. I don't remember talking about that. Because I feel like I would have been, I would have made something.
I missed that one, to be honest.
But in between Julius Randle's 2 good games that he's had so far this year, he had a really bad game. 5 personal fouls, 5 turnovers, 3 points, 2 rebounds. I don't know, man. He's more intriguing to me than he was in the preseason, at least, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's getting the minutes, right? So that's helpful. But he basically just has that one good game. I know you're counting that 15 and 11 as a good game, but that's a pretty empty line to me. He shot 5 of 13. He didn't get any rebound or any steals or blocks.
Right. If you're shooting 5 of 13 as a power forward, that's...
And you're getting nothing else besides just, I mean, the rebounds is really the only thing there. And 11 rebounds is nothing. Like, it isn't so special that you feel like that's going to sustain its value.
It's, I mean, 15 points and 11 rebounds in 30 minutes it's pretty damn impressive. But you're right. Are you getting enough elsewhere to make what he does there? Is it enough? Is the impressive stuff he's doing on a given night in rebounding and points enough when you aren't regularly getting blocks, steals, or three-pointers, or good percentages? So that's kind of the thing. And maybe that's what Julius Randle becomes, a better scoring version. A worse Zach Randolph, yeah. There you go. I was trying to find some way to compare him to JJ Hickson, but
no, don't do that.
I know we're not that mean. That's all I've got for notes today, man.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I'm Kyle McEwen. You can find me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. And Mark, where can they find you?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at Mark F. Roberts.
Sorry, switched up a little on you.
That's okay.
All right, guys, you can find our website is dailyfantasybasketballpodcast.com. Reminder that we do have the rest of season projections up there that you can use to help identify guys who are playing better during this year to help maybe you find out some trades that you might want to go after. Please continue to rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, any of the podcast apps that you use to listen to this on. It's very much appreciated. We love you. Have a good day. And our theme music is Happiness is All the Rage by The Promise Ring. And you can find their music at jadetree.com. Peace out, homies.
I got my body and my mind on the same page. And honey, now happiness is all the rage. I got my body and my mind on the same page. And honey, now happiness is all the rage.